Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining our Simplified Access series. We are going to discuss APP strategies for prior authorization and involving distribution. My name is Allison Moser. I'm a hepatology nurse practitioner at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago, and I'm joined by Tedra Gray, nurse practitioner at Sinai Chicago. She's another member of GAP. Jeff, do you mind introducing yourself?
Yes, thank you, Allison. My name is Jeff Dunn. I am a pharmacist by training. I have been in managed care for about 25 years now, and I've worked for a health plan that was part of an IDN and two different PBMs, currently serving again as president and CEO of a transparent pass-through PBM. And looking forward to the conversation. Prior authorizations are obviously a tool that we've used in managed care for a long time. And I'm looking forward to having a multi-stakeholder conversation. So maybe I'll start, Allison, with a question for you and Tedra. The first question is, how does prior authorization impact your daily practice and your patient's treatment outcomes?
Yes, great question. So prior authorizations can significantly affect both the efficacy of daily practice and patient care. Oftentimes, the process is time intensive and it requires substantial administrative work that takes away from direct patient interaction. From a patient care perspective, delays as a result of prior authorizations can postpone access to necessary medications or even procedures, potentially worsening the patient's condition or prolonging discomfort. It can be particularly challenging when the treatments being delayed are evidence-based and the best course of action for the patient.
I would agree, Jeff. I think it is, as Allison pointed out, it's a time-consuming process. It's a process that can delay access to care. It definitely takes away from patient care, direct patient care, and clinical outcomes can be severely impacted due to delay in medication access. And it's also challenging to kind of explain that to the patient when they are really in need of an impact or a drug that can impact their care.
Yeah, the patient component of that is super important. They don't understand healthcare. It's a very complicated entity, so I'm sure that's very frustrating. But you both mentioned a little bit around the challenges that you're seeing. Can you dive into that in a little bit more detail? You know, what specific common challenges are you facing when you're dealing with PA requests?
Sure. So oftentimes there's variability in requirements across insurers. Each payer has its own criteria and processes, which oftentimes changes with little notice. Another common obstacle is the lack of transparency with denials. Sometimes we do receive vague or insufficient explanations as to why a request was rejected, so it can make it difficult to address the issue effectively. Another thing is time demands of prior authorizations do detract from patient care. So not only does it create stress for the clinical team, as Tedra mentioned, also for the patient and their families as well.
Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree. I would say some of the most challenges that I experience would be probably meeting the criteria as well. A lot of the insurance requires the patients to have tried or failed formulary alternatives before they will cover the medications. And if they haven't tried any of them, then it's quite hard to get the PA covered. And having that conversation with the patient is quite important because you need to document appropriately in order to get the medication approved.
Great. Thank you. Have you found any specific steps that have been effective at minimizing the delays or any of the issues that you've been talking about?
So I think efficiency is really key with prior authorizations. We, in our practice, we maintain a centralized system for tracking payer requirements and past successful submissions. This allows us to streamline the documentation process. Completing a prior authorization as early as possible with all the pertinent medical information that's anticipated helps prevent denials. Also, collaboration is pretty essential. We do work closely with pharmacists, insurers, and our support staff to help expedite approvals. Sometimes we do need to escalate the case directly to insurance providers to help minimize delays.
I would agree. Great answer, Allison. I would say as soon what I do to effectively minimize delays would be as soon as I get a request, I'm notified via email or through our electronic medical record, through chats or pop-ups through Cover My Meds. And I try to work on it as soon as possible. So carving out some time in my day to immediately address them is the most effective way that I can, that I found helpful to minimize delays. And then also ensuring that my chart notes are as specific as possible, stating again what meds they've tried and failed, if any, and then also noting what has been effective, if the medication has been effective in the past, if this is something that we're trying to reintroduce to the patient, if they switched from a previous provider to me, to ensure that they can continue to get it covered.
Great, thank you. So you've both kind of alluded to some of the frustrations. And, you know, some of those are well acknowledged and understood in this space. How do you personally and professionally handle those frustrations when you're dealing with repeatedly having to respond, maybe even during the process for one PA, if it involves denials and re-auths and things like that? How do you deal with the frustration?
Certainly can be frustrating when we know what we're recommending is clinically appropriate, but I try to focus on the patient's best interests and remind myself the importance of advocacy. Providing comprehensive evidence-based documentation upfront helps reduce the need for multiple rounds of justification. Additionally, maintaining professionalism, making sure that we're having clear communication when engaging with insurers can help foster better outcomes. It's also important to have a support system within your practice, as well as with colleagues in other practices as well, like Tedra, for example, so we can share insights and strategies to help alleviate some of that emotional burden.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think to minimize the frustrations would be just to maintain expectations within the patient and yourself as a provider, citing references as far as journal articles and research articles in your conversations with the patient, as well as within your documentation, and then talking to your other colleagues within the field as far as what tools that they found to be effective, templates or stepwise processes when it comes to writing appeal letters if necessary. Just ensuring that you have a robust set of data and a letter that can easily be sent out if necessary. And keeping the patient informed is also what I found to minimize frustrations, because at the end of the day, they're the one that is in need of the medication and will mostly benefit from the impact that it will give. So keeping that lines of communication open.
Now, Jeff, I have a couple questions for you. Can you explain why prior authorization is required and what payers are looking for when they review requests?
Yeah, great question. I probably should start with a disclaimer, if that's okay, and just say that, you know, not all payers are the same or equal. And I'm just going to obviously give my perspective. In my intro, I mentioned I've worked for a couple different PBMs. I've worked for a larger national traditional PBM, and also am now leading a smaller transparent pass-through PBM, and there are different issues there. So I would just say the larger you get, it is more difficult to manage PAs in terms of both volume, but also regional differences. So if you are insuring lives, 30 or 50 million lives throughout the country, it's really hard to have a seamless PA process for, providers in the Northeast versus the Southwest, for example, where there may be practice differences. So acknowledging that difference, again, I'm just going to speak for myself. And I think from what we look at is a little trite, but it's true. It's the appropriate patient, appropriate drug at the appropriate time. And not to get on too much of a soapbox, but, we know we're all familiar with drug trends in this country and the cost of healthcare. And we were just looking at this earlier today in another setting. Is if there's been a 70% increase in drug prices in the last 5 years. And if you look back historically over the last 20, it seems like every 4 to 5 years, there's a doubling in drug costs in this country. And unfortunately, we're all in our silos and we all have some misaligned incentives. And so unfortunately, if you look at where the money flows in the cost of these things, it falls on the health plan or the employer to pay for these. And it's becoming increasingly difficult for employers to afford to provide healthcare insurance for their employees. So, one solution would be get to have more different models around risk arrangements and some shared decision making and things like that. But I don't know if that's even feasible, quite honestly. So again, the issue is high costs and the need to manage those. If I did not prior authorize a $500,000 drug, the people that were paying me to manage their formularies and to be a fiduciary for them would question what I'm doing. So we have to. So it really is about appropriate drug, appropriate patient, and appropriate time. But to your point earlier, we really need to see the evidence. And, you know, we do, you know, try to practice evidence-based medicine. But we do have a fiduciary responsibility that we have to keep in mind as well.
How does payer staffing or priorities influence the speed and success of prior authorization approvals?
Yeah, prior authorizations are a high priority for most organizations. We have a lot of drugs we have to prior authorize because of cost and maybe misuse or inappropriate utilization. So we try to staff appropriately, and we try to turn around prior authorizations very quickly. So again, like I said earlier, not all payers are the same, but these are prior authorizations are a high priority for us. We try to turn most PAs around within a day or so, but acknowledge that's not always the case. Member satisfaction KPIs are super important for us. So we, our goal is not to deny. I think there's been some bad publicity in the market with payers and PBMs where they're using algorithms and other things to deny. That's inappropriate, right? It really should be, how do we get the yes, and how do we do that appropriately? But we do need to practice evidence-based medication. But we also have, as you mentioned, Tedra and Allison both earlier, you know, member satisfaction is important. But we're walking a fine line. We're trying to thread a needle between clinical appropriateness, financial responsibility, and patient satisfaction.
Thank you for listening to episode 1 of this 3-part series. Please tune in to episode 2.